And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 788, continuing the projections review for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, part two. We're going to talk about the players that, let's just say, exceeded projections. This is the nicest way I'll say, because some blew them out of the water for certain reasons that'll be obvious once we get there. We'll talk about a lot of names. Last week, we talked about the, I guess, kind of most accurate projections. A lot of players, most people might be like, whatever. A lot of names you're curious about here is what I'll say as a preface to this. Before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric and my co-host, as always, the man behind the projection review sheet. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing all right, Bubba. It's not a whole lot goes into it, but the way you put it there, it's pretty simple stuff. But yeah, I think it's a good to review now the biggest standouts, I guess, is one way to put it in terms of how the projections failed. It's mostly going to be positives because we're filtering on at-bats, which we'll get into. So we won't be talking about any people who missed their projections because of injury for the most part. But so that's why you'll see a lot of exceeding or high performers in this episode.
Yep, I have a feeling if people are listening already, they're thinking, okay, I think I can guess who the top guy is. We'll get to him shortly. Once we say it, it'll make a lot of sense that he exceeded.
You love to hide his name in your shows.
Yes, I do. It's a trend now. We're going to see how long I can do this for just to annoy people. But before we get to that, Ben, just for fun, who do you have? Jays, Dodgers?
Well, my heart says the Jays. My head says probably the Dodgers.
Yes, sadly.
It was, as a Yankee fan, this wasn't the matchup I wanted to see because after the Jays just kind of owned the Yankees this year. I didn't want to see them win. So I was hoping for the Mariners. Also because they haven't won a World Series yet. But if I have to pick between the Jays and the Dodgers, I'm going to root for the Jays, and it'll probably be like the Dodgers in five or something like that because they seem to be unstoppable in October now.
Yep, they are unstoppable right now, sadly to say. So I'm just hoping for a good series, and if the Jays want to pull one out of the hat, I would be ecstatic over that one. All right, let's get into it. Just give a brief synopsis again. If people missed the first episode, I recommend they go back and listen to it. But what are you and I looking at to give the analysis for these players?
Okay, yeah. So first up, we have our projections, which we mentioned. I used aggregate of Steamer, ATC, and the BatX, just a straight average of the three. No weights to any of them. So we're looking at the projected runs, homers, RBIs, steals, at bats, and then also what I calculate is the weighted average, because when I do my z-scores, I can't just have the player's straight average because there's no weight behind it. Because for example, somebody hits 270 with 400 at bats and someone else hits 270 with 500 at bats, the player with 500 at bats at 270 is going to help your team more than the player with 400. So you have to find a way of capturing that impact on the 100 extra at bats at the same average. So that's why there's a weighted average here, and we can just tell based on how big it is compared to the people around them. It can also be positive too, because it's comparing it to the league average. So, I mean, it can also be negative because it's comparing to the league average. So we're looking at those five projected categories, and then we're looking at the exact same thing, only the actual. So actual runs, homers, RBI, steals, actual weighted average, actual at-bats. Then we're looking at the difference between the two. So it's going to be projected minus actual. And lastly, I mentioned the z-scores earlier, talking about the projections. I have the projection z-score hitter ranks, and then I have the actual hitter ranks based on z-scores. So like last week we were comparing the players who had the most accurate projections, and to do that we're looking at something called MAE, mean absolute error, and that's just comparing the difference between their projected runs, homers, RBIs, steals. There's a difference between when you subtract the projection and the average from each other, and you just average those differences together, but it's an absolute value of them. So there's no canceling out. It's just like if you're three runs above, it's the same as being three RBIs below your projection. It's just seeing how far away from the projection the players actually were. And I think you kind of said this, but I'll just reiterate it. Today we're looking at the hitters that have at least 400 at-bats this past season, and we're looking at the players that have the biggest MAE. So whose actual production varied the most from their projections, but they had to at least play 400 at bats. And I said this earlier in the intro, but For example, Yordan Alvarez would be on this list as a high MAE hitter, but for the wrong reasons, because he barely played this year. He was hurt. So he would be on the list, but we know he was hurt. So there's no point in really going over him for this exercise. So we'll be talking about players that played most of the season, at least.
Yes. And that first player we will discuss, he had an ADP of 450 entering the season. This player collected a whopping 420 at-bats when he was projected for 30 this season. This player finished at an actual rank of 29 compared to his projection ranks of 624. He scored 90 runs, hit 36 homers, 86 RBIs, and stole two bases. If I told you Nick Kurtz was projected for one home run this season, I think we probably would have been like, okay, cool. Nick Kurtz is a player with at least 400 at-bats that I guess just completely flipped the projections on its head this year, Ben. And it seems pretty simple once you say the name out loud. You're like, yeah, that checks out. The dude was an absolute monster. But and I really don't think there's a takeaway here, to be honest. Like, what do you do? But what are your thoughts on Nick Kurtz just completely obliterating his projections?
Yeah, I remember people were talking about drafting Kurtz in DCs, and I remember thinking, well, they have Soderstrom there. Kurtz hasn't played at all in the minors. I go, there's no way they're going to call him up because they already had a bunch of outfielders as well. They had Lawrence Butler. They had J.J. Blade at the time, who I thought was going to be good. He was awful. So it was a lot of – you think everything is set, but, of course, nothing actually is. And Kurtz dominated in the minors, so they wanted to call him up. Yeah, and the projection seemed like he was going to be up for maybe September. That was it, 30 at-bats, one homer perhaps. The only thing I'm just going to comment on now with Kurtz is looking forward. I don't know. Well, maybe I don't have to get into this now because it's just like a projection review, but it's the K rate still. That's going to, I know Ryan was talking about that a lot as well. He's young. It could improve, but, when it's 30%, it's going to be hard to take him early for me. So, he was a beast. His rest of his stat cast is super red. The only thing that's really not that red for Kurtz is his XBA. And that's because of the K rate that he had, which was fourth percentile among qualified hitters. So an awesome debut for him. It's just, it's going to be interesting to see what projections say for him this year, because there's only a 1 year sample. I wonder what they're going to do with the strikeouts and the batting average. Cause he had 290 this year, XBA at 255 is a pretty big difference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can project him to drop the K rate all that much, but he doesn't chase a lot. It's more like it's a whiff problem. So when he swings, he's swinging for the fences, and if he connects, it's going a long way, or he's hitting it really hard. So it's, yeah. So you weren't drafting Kurtz, like I said, unless you're doing so in a DC, but this is just a huge fat pickup. And I never would expect this from a rookie. So this is one of those examples where I'm proven wrong.
Yes. But as we've talked before, you're proven way more right than wrong when it comes to rookies in these scenarios. But it's wild, 'cause like, I don't think anybody can say the encore is going to be the same if better. It's really tough to duplicate that kind of production with that K rate. We can all root for it. And there are people that maybe are saying that because he's getting drafted in the first round of a ton of early drafts. We don't have official ADP out there, but you see enough boards flying around Twitter and everywhere else that he is a popular first round pick at worst, like mid second round most of the time. I think I saw like with whoever had the third pick, I don't know if it was a 12 or a 15, they got him in the second round, which seems like that might be the min you're going to see, or the max you're going to see for Kurtz this season, because someone in your draft will like him a lot and take that pick on him, and you'll have to see where that goes. All right, now we get to a player that really shined, is the best way I can say it. A player that was projected for 59 runs scored, 7 home runs, 42 RBIs, and 14 steals. We knew Geraldo Perdomo was known for his glove. So that projection kind of was like, okay, it kind of checks out. Ben, he was, you know, he's had 4 seasons in the bigs, 3 full seasons. He's only 24 years old, hadn't hit more than 6 homers, stole 16 bags once. Not the biggest offensive threat. Well, Perdomo proved almost all of us wrong. 98 runs scored for Perdomo, 20 home runs, 100 RBIs, 27 stolen bases, and the dude hit 290. Literally one of the best surprise seasons on the planet, and he shattered the projections, which had him projected for 434 at-bats. He had 597. So even with 163 at-bat bump, it still wasn't close. Like, he just destroyed the projections. So where are you at on a guy like Perdomo? Because I like to use the term a lot, like guys get younger, younger guys can improve. This was just a leap off the page improvement, though.
It was. I pulled up my sheet from 2025 that has all the underlying data from 2024 in it, which is a basis that I use for creating my own rankings and all that stuff, getting ready for drafts. And Perdomo's hard hit in 2024 was 25.8. It was only 31.9%. So it went up, but only 6 percentage points, and it was still 11th percentile. His barrel rate was 3.1% in 2024. He doubled it, but it was still only 6.2%, which is 25th percentile. The exit velocity was roughly the same. He only gained half a mile per hour to 87.6, which is 16th percentile. So nothing from 2024 said that he should have done this past season, and at least the power wasn't supported by the underlying power metrics either. So it's kind of wild that Perdomo hit 20 homers like this. The average definitely improved because his XBA in 2024 was 230, but this year it was 285. So we got a huge jump there. He cut down on the K rate, which was already really low to begin with. There's just no way of projecting this kind of breakout, I don't think, unless he went to driveline maybe. But even then, the results didn't really appear in the exit velocity, the barrel rate, like I said. The bat speed's pretty bad, so the power isn't going to be a sticking point. I'm not sure what his expected homers were, Perdomo. He had, where are they? Actually, 19.2 expected homers. So maybe he was just pulling the ball. There's now the pulled air rate. All right, so this is where it is. So he had a 19.9% pull air rate, which is red on Savant. So that's near the top. So maybe he's going for the Isaac Paredes profile.
From the left side, the DD Gregorius.
Oh yeah, he's a switch hitter actually. Perdomo, go figure. Oh, yeah, so more like DD, but with better average skills than Paredes. It's a weird one. I don't. There's no way you can project this. Predict this. Clearly, projections were way off on Perdomo, but I don't know. It's gonna be fascinating to see what happens with him as the drafts ramp up.
Yeah, his ADP was 492. So end game, middle infield, bench bat with Perdomo. There was discussions like, oh, don't forget Jordan Lawler is going to take his job. All those things. Yeah, none of that happened as he put those people's comments to rest real quick. Another guy that put their comments to rest, the big dumper himself, Cal Raleigh, had an ADP of 95. The 115th projected hitter finished fourth. I'd say that would do it. That'll do it. Nearly 100 more at-bats than he had projected. He was projected for 28 home runs, Ben. He hit 60. More impressively, honestly, projected for 3 steals, stole 14 from a catcher's position that doesn't steal bags. It was just an amazing season. The dumper is a machine. He benefited tremendously from getting all those DH reps. That's one, like, I've said it many times, probably with you and others, that if you want to try to predict playing time bumps from projections, catcher's the first spot I'd look. Because you look at guys that are going to get DH at-bats. They don't always project that because most projection sites use three-year averages, which they don't have the DH the whole time. We'll see how that keeps changing. That might change as the years come up. But early on, that was like one of those where you can kind of pinpoint a few things. But massive season. Again, I think people projected the power. No one projected the improvement. He almost hit 250 at the plate. And then the speed was ridiculous.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at Raleigh's underlying metrics on Savant, and as good as they were pretty good last year, or 2024 as well. He went from a barrel rate of 15% to 19.5%, which he was 99th percentile this year with a 19.5% barrel rate. The hard hit was roughly the same, but so I looked up the pulled air rate, like with Perdomo and Raleigh. This is insane. He went from 29.5, which was already very red, more so than Perdomo's 19%. Raleigh is now 38.4% this past year for his pulled air rate. So when you have a 19% barrel rate and you're pulling the ball that much in the air, that's why you're going to hit 60 homers. He had 80 barrels. So, of course, he got a little lucky with the barrel rate, but he still missed out on 20 homers with those 20 extra barrels. Not that he's going to hit them all out, of course, but just saying. So, yeah, this is just you couldn't have predicted him to double his projected homer total, which is essentially what drove all of his value because the average was – better than it was projected for with Raleigh. It still wasn't helpful, but when he's hitting 60 homers with 120 RBIs and 14 steals as catcher, you don't really care at that point. It's just what's he go back to? I think he'll probably get projected for like 38 homers if I had a guess for next year. So he'll be gaining 10 from what he had, because I don't get how you can project him for more than 40. The only ones that are like that are like Judge and Ohtani and Schwarber, I think. And I don't know if they'll do that to a catcher who's only done it once so far. I may be harsh, but that's just what I'm thinking so far.
It's tough to project a catcher just because of injury, but like their injury potential is so much higher than others. So I'm with you. They're going to give him his love. There's no doubt about it, but it's going to be real tricky to predict that. And another guy went in the first round in an NPC 50 mentioned in the Discord the other day, which I love catchers. It's well established. I could never do that. That just does not on the I struggle with a second round catcher, let alone a first round catcher. So more power to you. Dude's awesome. Don't pay for his MVP season. All right, another player wasn't even drafted. Undrafted. Finished 68th at the hitter rankings. And he blew away his projections because he hit well and played every day, and that is Trent Grisham. Grisham was projected for 208 at-bats, Ben. He had 494 at-bats. He was projected for 9 home runs. Trent Grisham hit 34 home runs for the Yankees, which obviously means the 27 projected RBIs, 74, 29 runs, 87. Actually stole fewer bases than he was projected for, which is comical when you really think about it. Just another great season. You saw him. I started just tweeting out every time he'd have home runs, like, what are we doing here? Like, how is this happening? But Trent Grisham continued to do it. And one of the things that has always surprised me when looking back at Trent Grisham, he's only 28 years old. I feel like he's been playing forever and he hasn't been. So like part of me is like, okay, this is impossible. It should never have happened. But also, yeah, 34 might be nuts, but we've seen 15 home runs, 17 home runs. We've seen like power kind of from Grisham, and he's still only 28. So why can't he tap into a little more, let alone the ballpark obviously helps.
Yeah, and you mentioned the ballpark. He's going to be a free agent, Grisham, so who knows where he ends up. I don't know if the Yankees want to bring him back. It depends on if they get Bellinger, I'm assuming, because they probably want to give Dominguez a full-time shot, but they didn't really like him this year. Maybe it's just because of how well Grisham was playing that Dominguez got the short end of the stick. It's tough to tell. We'll have to wait and see what they actually do. So I pulled like I've been doing with the other players we've been reviewing, I pulled up my sheet from last year for Grisham. And it's actually surprisingly good. There's a lot of green. I try to color code the different metrics just to help things catch my eyes as I'm reviewing players. And just sticking to the power metrics, Grisham had a 11.9% barrel rate in 2024 and a 46% hard hit rate and a 90.4 average exit velocity. Going to this year, his barrel rate went up to 14%, but it only went up 2 percentage points. So, and the hard hit was essentially the same. It was 46.4%. And I think the reason here is just that we didn't expect him to play. If you went to roster resource, the projection was it's going to be Dominguez, Judge, and Bellinger in the outfield. And then I forget what happened that got Grisham into the lineup, but he started producing. And I didn't realize he was this good in limited time last year for the Yankees with those power numbers. I think because the average was so bad, his XBA was 209 last year. This year went up to 257. But I guess the numbers were there. It was just a matter of playing time, and that's really what happened here because we have the projection of 208 at-bats. That's 9 homers, though. So if you double that, that's 18, and then that's 416 at-bats. That's not terrible. And then give him an extra 5 for 500 at-bats, and he's at 23-ish, which is a pretty good projection for Trent Grisham at this point. And he just happened to hit a few more homers with 34, so I guess looking at it now that there are some signs, but you just have to take a leap of faith that the playing time would be there, and you couldn't predict that.
You cannot predict that, but it makes me wonder as we get deep into draft season and projections come out and everyone's looking at things, do players like this, if we can look at going, okay, like what if? Like he's the fourth outfielder. What if? Like is this now does that make us think round 28, round 29? Should us take a chance on this guy? That kind of question. Instead of taking a chance, I know you don't as much, we talked about, but a lot of guys are like, let's take the shiny new toy and see what happens. Or how about we go take Trent Grisham? As boring as that sounds, given this was an amazing season, does not always pan out this way, but you can also drop your round 28, 29 pick. So it kind of makes me wonder in that regard.
He would have popped in Seamer 600, I think, looking at these projections.
That's interesting as well. Trevor Story. Great season from Trevor Story, a guy that I liked a lot, caught some flack on, worked out well. He had an ADP of 247, 178th projected hitter, finished 20th at the position, thanks to 25 homers, 31 stolen bases, 91 runs, and 96 RBIs. He was projected to go 13-17, and he also far exceeded his batting average, Ben. So it was just whatever Trevor Story could do, it was great. And he hit 263, but not even close to that projection. He blew that out of the water. So great season for Trevor Story. First season with over 27 steals, first 30 steal season, of course. First season with 25 or more home runs since 2019. Obviously healthy for the first time in a long time. And even lowered his strikeout rate to one of the better years of his career. So what are your thoughts on Trevor Story, who another guy, he was projected to have 396 at-bats, had 612.
Yeah, you after his injury history with, well, I guess some of them were fluky because I know he had the diving play that he dislocated his shoulder, and I think he had something else along the way too. The last 2 years, Story has barely played, 2023, 2024, not a lot of playing time at all. But looking at his Statcast, it's not, I thought it'd be a lot better, and it's not that good. The XBA was 256, which is in line with a 263 average. His average exit velocity was 91.4 miles per hour, 82nd percentile. The barrel rate was just 58th percentile. The hard hit was 73rd percentile. Everything else is a decent shade of blue. The Ks were still there. They did come down from 2024. His K rate that year is 31% for Story. This year, he dropped it down to 27%, but that was still 12th percentile. So I could I'll probably be out on him just looking at what the underlying data right now, what it's saying. Like the whiffs are there. He chases a lot still. He's going to be a year older. I don't know if he can avoid an injury again. And the sprint speed's there, but I don't know. It's going to be tough. He's probably going to go inside the top 100. I don't know where he has been going. I could see after he went 25-30, Story was going to go up. It's going to move a lot, but I still don't think the underlying data is there. And the projections. So we were talking about Luis Garcia last week, how his ADP didn't really match his projection. I could see the same thing happening for Story this year, where people are going to push him up because of the year he had. And if you do SGPs or Z-scores or any dollar value using the projections, he's probably going to come out as a poor value compared to his ADP.
Yeah, if he's a top 100 pick, there's probably, I'm going to just assume zero chance I have any Trevor Story shares this year, because I love the guy, but I loved his price as well last year. When I was looking at Trevor Story, if the price is up there, that's going to be a probably a no for me dog on that one. Now, a player I'm very excited to see where his ADP went, because he was undrafted this past season. His ADP is zero this past season. That's Addison Barger. He's projected for 111 at-bats, hitter 433 coming into the season based on projections. Finishes the 121st hitter with 460 at-bats, so 349 more at-bats in his projection, 21 homers, 74 RBIs, 61 runs and 4 steals. A phenomenal season for Barger, a guy that many were kind of interested in based on the quality of contact metrics that some were looking at, but he pieced it together and came through in a big way in his age 25 season. Still another young guy that could maybe potentially take a bigger leap. Who knows?
Yeah, the one thing I want to pull up right now with Barger is his splits, because he's a lefty, he's young, and that could have a big role in what happens to him next year. So Barger, all right, so I think I reviewed this last week, but my threshold for percentage of at-bats versus righties of your total, or it's not at-bats, it's plate appearances, so your percentage of total plate appearances versus righties, if it's above 80%, I consider you in a platoon, and Barger was at 82.3%. So he was he's essentially in a platoon this past season as a left-handed hitter, which in my eyes, it hurts his value. I know I think you and Ryan debated that as well in your second base review. I forget, you may have been talking about Luis Garcia Jr. then as well and some other hitters that, yep. I think Bryson Stott came up because they're lefties and they kind of platoon. And there's the debate of, okay, do you want them to play versus lefties at all for maybe extra runs and RBIs, or do you want them to sit? And I like to avoid those players if I can. But Barger had great numbers, so it was just a matter of playing time. I forget who got injured that allowed him to get called up and stick. Well, his performance let him stick, but there was an injury that allowed the playing time. That's why the projection was non-existent for him. But yeah, a lot of red in the Statcast, mostly in the power numbers. The K rate isn't awful. It doesn't look well. look that good in Baseball Savant because they give it a 32nd percentile. It's only 24% K rate, which you can survive with. So I think Barger will be interesting. I know he was getting drafted. I think he got drafted in the first 11 for the meatball draft, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, which may be a little high for me because I don't think he steals a lot and because of the platoon. But at that point in the year, it's hard to get a good sense of where people should go. So can't really blame whoever took him because Barger was breaking out this year. So maybe there's growth next year. I don't know what his splits were versus lefties, but that's I won't look that up now. So was that something to look?
I got it right now. Lefties he hit .217, righties he hit .249. He had 89 plate appearances versus lefties, 413 versus righties. Only one of his 20 home runs versus lefties. So yeah, if you go deeper down to actual other metrics, he had a 120 ISO, 607 OPS versus lefties, 231 ISO, 7. So mashed righties to your point, not so much the lefty side of thing.
Yeah, and so if he goes in the top 200 next year, I might be out on Barger. I don't know. We'll see what happens, though.
A lot of time before you start drafting, Ben, so we don't have to worry about that.
Got a couple holidays to go.
I'll keep you posted on how this goes. Right, Andy Páez. Now, this is a guy that I was all in on early in draft season. Then they signed Michael Conforto, so I was still interested, kind of backed off a bit. And then the shares he had, he started out the year pretty rough. If you held on, though, it paid off in spades, or diamonds, one might say, in the end. He had an ADP of around 374, the 247th projected hitter, projected for 259 at-bats. Páez came in at the 45th hitter, 581 at-bats. He was projected for 11 home runs, hit 27, projected for 3 steals, stole 14. Now, think about it, basically almost doubled his plate appearances. But he blew his batting average projection out of the water, like destroyed it. And then you factor that on top of all those extra at-bats, it's going to make it stand out probably even more. Páez had a monster season. And this is a guy that, curious to hear your thoughts as you dig in on him here, but he's another super young ball player, 24, that I don't know if we've seen the best of Andy Páez just yet.
No, there's a good chance we haven't. Looking at Páez, you're kind of outlining the difference in his projected at-bats versus actual at-bats. And I think the same thing I said about Grisham kind of stands. If you were to look at the Seamer 600 for Páez for last year, it's probably not a whole lot off compared to what he actually did because he more than doubled his projected at-bats. So you take the 37-11, 37 projection, at least double it. So you're looking at like 74, 22, 74. He had 74 runs in that extra playing time. That's off by 5 homers and off by 12 RBIs. So a little bit of consistent playing time and maybe you improve your skills and there you're at what he actually did. So with Pop, who was the Dodgers outfield? Was Mookie projected for the outfield?
Yeah, Conforto.
Edmund probably, right?
Teoscar.
Yeah, so there was no spot for Páez. And then I think the Edmund injury is what really did it. And then Conforto wasn't good. So it's just one of those things where playing time opened up and he took advantage of it. And looking at the XBA, 266 for Páez, so not far off from 272. So do I have him up right here? I think I pulled it up. Yeah, Páez in 2024 in limited time, his XBA was 254, so not terrible. So for whatever reason, the projection didn't really like his average contribution, but he showed that he hasn't K'd all that much, Páez, so I think his average should be okay, and he should probably be projected for a positive one going into 2026.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Let's talk about your boy. Let's just get right to it. Pretty much going to give the intro and walk away for a bit. Rice, baby. Ben Rice at an ADP of 346. The 381st projected hitter finished 89th at the position. Ben Rice was only projected for 140 at-bats. He ended up getting 467 at-bats, hitting 26 home runs. So this was a massive jump in projections. He played 50 games at first, 48 at DH, and 36 at catcher. So we get to enjoy all that goodness as well. What are your thoughts on this Ben Rice projection? Because I just blindly looking at it, so if, let's just say three times – the at-bats, the projections might not have been that far off.
No, and so he had 7 projected homers, 140 at-bats. That's one every 20. So if you give him 500 at bat, that's 25 homers. And that's essentially what he did. So this is another Steamer 600 that would have, I think, really stood out if you had looked at that for Ben Rice, which I said it three times now. So maybe I should start looking at Steamer 600 and see.
I know. I'm starting to think that this might, I've looked at it in the past. I've never done a ton with it. We've done minor things with it on other shows, but this feels like a potential article in the making or something.
Yeah, let's throw it into an SGP, or I'll do Z-scores for the Steamer 600 and see who clicks. All right, hopefully no one's listening to the podcast because I'm going to start doing... No, I'm just kidding. So Rice, if you're in the Bubble in the Loom Patreon, you know my love for Ben Rice. He was on my main event that finished 12th overall. So as a Yankee fan, I had doubled the reason to be in on him doing well this year. And his stat cast is about as red as it can get for Ben Rice. The only thing that held him back was he had a weird spell of not playing because Aaron Boone. I forget why. I think it was like when Stan came back, they got crunched at DH, and that's kind of where Rice was filling in. He was between first DH and catcher all year. But they realized how good of a hitter he was, so he ended up playing in the second half pretty consistently. And I was thinking about it. I think it was like CBS was – I know you and Ryan debated catchers in your reviews, and CBS was talking about their catcher reviews for this past year. And I think Scott White said maybe – I don't think he had him second. Maybe – I don't know if it was Towers or Frank. We're talking about Ben Rice being pretty high, but I could see him being my catcher too behind Raleigh, because if he's playing first base all year and his XBA was 299, his barrel rate was 15.4%, his hard hit was 56.1%. If he's playing every day as a catcher, he could hit like 30, 35 homers with 80 runs, 80 RBIs and 270 batting average. That's a stud. So I'll probably have a lot of Ben Rice this year, even though the price will be way higher than what I paid for him in the main event. I think it's going to be worth it.
There's a crazy thought for you. And again, I have not dug in on any of this, but if that is your projection for Ben Rice, I'd have him as my number one catcher because he's playing first base and not having to deal with the potential injuries at catcher.
But so what do you think the projection would be for Ben Rice? Not that you would necessarily know, but what do you think they're going to project him for homers wise?
I'd say probably like he hit 26 this year. I'd say you're close like 23, 24, just because I don't know if they're going to trust he gets the full load at first base projection. Because again, this is young players and then they're using previous year's samples. We haven't got that yet. So yeah, that's the only part. Like, I know Ariel Cohen with ATC will tweak playing time quite a bit. Most other projections, like the bat speaker, I just totally blanked.
Steamer.
Thank you. And the others, a lot of them, they might tweak it a little bit, but for the most part, they just use their kind of aggregator on those things. And so if there's going off previous seasons, it's going to be tough to predict his actual batting average. So yeah, if he, say they predict him to take, 500 at bats and hit 24 home runs, you think he's going to play first base all season? Now go plug in your Steamer 600, Ben, and now you're getting closer to probably 27. And if he plays every day, maybe it's more like 650 at bats and that whole formula comes into play. Now, my question for you is Aaron Boone managing the team? Because if he is, I don't trust any of this.
Yeah, I think he has years left on his contract, and they're not one to fire their manager. Well, yeah, it's been a long time since George was around firing their managers left and right. But I'm a little ahead of myself with the projection, because looking at it, he had 7 homers last year and then 26 this year. So them projecting him for more than 30 is going to probably be a little out of the question. But so he might be one of those leap of faith guys where we see him again next year on this, when we do this review, because the projection might be modest, and then based on the skills, he might just show growth still. Or just, if he just meets what he did this year, Rice should get luckier with the average and probably the power as well.
Well, one of the standout things for a lot of these guys we've already talked about, and many more we will talk about, super young players that got a gigantic leap in playing time. Like, we already knew that a lot of these standouts would have got leaps in playing time. It's just how this projection thing would have worked to get forward at bats and shatter them. But a lot of them are young players that got their opportunity. And so it comes back to your leap of faith comment. Like, this is not a Ryan Bloomfield episode. This isn't at all, because it's all old people that he's seen proven. There's no leaps of faith there. This is a leap of faith. Do you believe this guy gets a shot? And if he does, do you believe his skills? Yes, you do. Okay, there you go. This is kind of what took place here. Speaking of which, the Goose. Augustin Ramirez. He was ADP of around 450, projected to be the 351st hitter, finished 98th at the hitting position, projected for 189 at-bats, had 537, which is outstanding. hit 21 homers and more impressively stole 16 bags. Only hit 231, which is a bummer. But if my catcher's giving me almost a 2020 season, like, I think I can sacrifice the batting average just a little bit on that one. And you could hopefully build for it. Again, batting average is tricky. But this is one of those. The kid was one of the top catching prospects in baseball, got his chance, and he literally ran with it.
I like what you did there, Bubba. Yeah, he Ramirez was a miss on myself. I think I mentioned when we did my review for my one-man event that I went for Edgar Caro, just wanting to get one of the catchers, and I completely whiffed on I just picked the wrong guy to go after, and I wouldn't have known any better to expect this from Ramirez. And yeah, he almost went 2020 in a partial season. Yeah, to your point, the average hurt, but when you're getting those counting stats and homers and steals from a catcher, you're not going to complain. And I'm trying to look at this. So he was projected for 189 at-bats, Ramirez, 6 homers, 4 steals, kind of double it. It's 18 and 12. So he wasn't that far off. Well, actually, he outpaced that projection skills-wise, so that's good to see. Did you talk about his K rate at all or anything like that? I don't think you did.
No, I did not mention his K rate. No.
Yeah, actually, his XBA was 270. So that's good to see. Only struck out 19% of the time, Ramirez, which is 61st percentile. So that tells me he had a little unlucky with the BABIP. And he's going to be a stud. So
yep.
People see the average and they kind of sleep on the underlying skills, because he's someone I would definitely target. He is the new JTR.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. It's again, I get a lot of things wrong on these shows, a lot of things. But that was one of those that when he got called up, I said he will definitely be a top 10 catcher if he plays every day. And he was probably, from the point he got called up, definitely a top 10. He might have been a top 5 catcher by the time things were all said and done. So very talented ball player. Another talented ball player, I believe he was the second overall catcher this past season, if not third. Actually, I have the sheet right here. Let me just flip it over. Hunter Goodman, yes, the second overall catcher, according to Fangraphs Player Rater, ADP of 321. Imagine that, Ben. ADP of 321. He's got the second best catcher in all of baseball. Pretty great stuff. He was the projected 243rd hitter, finished 52nd at the position. And this is where it gets real good. Like, he's projected for 14 home runs, hit 31, which, okay, he a little less than doubled his plate. Well, yeah, about, you know what I'm trying to say, about, you know, not doubled, but 35% increase or something.
It's close to doubling.
It's close. 42 ribbies, 91. So, like, those projections are kind of close. What Hunter Goodman did that really blew this out of the water, Hunter Goodman hit 278. 278. That is ridiculous, and it was great to see.
Yeah, I believe that's the cores coming into effect, because his XBA was 254. He had a pretty elevated K rate, Goodman, 26%. So I think, but that's fine though, because he's staying in cores. So this is one of the things you do with cores hitters. I think Tovar was a great example last year. He had, well, it didn't come through, but the year prior, he had pretty awful underlying metrics and he ended up hitting pretty well, Tovar, and it was a good player. But of course, it fell apart this year. Goodman isn't nearly as bad of a hitter in terms of skills as Tovar was. I wouldn't worry about that. But yeah, you kind of outlined it there when you went through the projection and the actual stats for Goodman. Another Steamer 600 standout, because if you double that, he's projected for 28 homers, 80 RBIs, 70 runs, and that's almost what he returned, Goodman. So another win for Steamer 600. And and I was trying to think.
Just strengthening your thoughts on that one.
Oh yeah, I already made a note in my file for 2026 to look at Steamer 600 for like DC picks, but this is frustrating because it seemed like Jacob Stallings was the catcher for the Rockies, which he shouldn't be, but everything was pointing to it. And I remember I was in the New Jersey main event, one of them, and I remember when Goodman was drafted, I was like, why, he's not even playing? Why would you take Goodman? And of course, here I look like an idiot now, where he's the second best catcher in baseball. But yeah, it's hard to you see so many things, and it's tough. That's the thing. That's why we need Curlin to come back with MLB playing time. We need other opinions on who's going to play. So roster resource is great, but it's just proof that one person doesn't have all the answers. And maybe if I looked at Steamer 600, I could say, okay, well, why would Stallings play when you have this guy who's so good on a per plate appearance basis, Goodman? So this is something to consider for next year, I suppose.
And you weren't alone in that. It's like we mentioned his ADP, Jason Collette in the chat saying give him the 21st rounder. It was. He was the second best catcher in baseball. And it's one of those that a lot of us liked him early in draft season before the Jacob Stallings rumblings came around. And it's like, okay, will he DH or play outfield enough to get the reps? Because maybe Bud Black wants a defensive catcher back behind the plate. And let's not forget, Goodman's only played two seasons. He was entering his age 25 season, his third season in baseball, so hadn't technically proven a full season's of work yet. Blew it out of the water. It comes back to it's a constant problem for a lot of, like myself and other drafters. It's do you go the Guild route and just, you know, you have a process, but you also take a lot more shoot-the-moon type plays like a Goodman potentially, or do you stay just like floor, like we're going to pepper it to death and be cool with it and miss out on these potential just monsters that take you to the promised land? It's a every year conversation that takes place on draft day and after post draft analysis, but it's always easy Captain Hindsight stuff here, but it's a constant I guess speed bump in certain drafts, at least for me when it comes to these players. Okay, now we get an old on the list here. It's been a ton of youngs like we talked about. I say old, but he's 31. So, you know, I'm the old, apparently, in this mix. Heck, he's probably still older than you, Ben. We got Ramon Laureano, a guy that was crushing it for the O's, gets traded to the Padres, continues to swing it well, did battle his injuries. But Ramon Laureano was undrafted because technically didn't have a place to play when the season started. Injuries because, you know, God forbid Tyler O'Neill stays healthy for a season. Injuries opened up in Baltimore and Colton Cowser. Laureano was projected for 233 at-bats, received 441, projected for 8 homers, hit 24, drove in 76, and had an outstanding 281 batting average, the best since 2019 as a member of the Oakland Athletics for Ramon Laureano. So what are your thoughts here? Because this is another guy that it's always been injuries slash he's like a fourth outfield platoon situation, but also a guy that we know when he gets playing time, there's power, there's speed, like there's potential there, just has never really come fully into, hadn't hit 24 home runs since 2019. He hasn't done this type of season in a while. So what are your thoughts on Laureano in this projection?
Yeah, this was the year we were waiting for when we kept taking Laureano in DCs or late because he always had the power and the speed, and then he had that suspension. I forget what year that was. I'd have to go back and try to look at the playing time to figure it out. But he was never the same after that. And in only 441 at-bats, he basically had a full year's worth of production with the 24 homers and 7 steals and close to 80 runs in RBI. So this came out of nowhere for Laureano. I was looking at his underlying metrics from the past year. In 2024, his carry rate was 31%. He cut that to 24% this past season. The XBA jumped from 241 to 282. I think that's kind of correlated with the drop in the K rate. The hard hit was still pretty good. It actually, well, he increased it by almost 10% and went from 40% to 49.1. The barrel rate was actually pretty good in 2024 for Laureano, 12%. He increased it to 13.8%. So there were some decent underlying numbers. The X slug was 442 a couple of years ago, and then this year it went up to 531, almost 100-point jump in his X slug. Like, there's no way of predicting that. So, yeah, I don't think this is an argument you could say with Seamer 600. It would have been okay because 8-6 homers and steals and 233 at-bats isn't that bad. But I don't know if Laureano even had a team when we were drafting in March. So, yes, this is one of those ones that comes out of nowhere, and I don't know how you could have predicted this of happening. So it's just one of those fluky things that we can't foresee.
Another likely strong early season fab pickup, unless you're like Jason Collette in an 11-team AL-only league. Let's get to the fifth catcher off the board here. Fifth catcher we're going to discuss. And Ben didn't do this just for me. This is just how it works, people. It goes back to my theory of you can project some catchers for more playing time and find your niches right here. Drake Baldwin, another rookie stud, ADP of 363, was getting drafted about 90 picks ahead of Augustin Ramirez, which is very interesting to look back on. Drake pretty much played most of the season. He had platoon a lot. He had 405 plate appearances. The Goose had 537, blew him out of the water once he got called up. But Baldwin's 405 was projected for 106 plate appearances, projected for 5 homers, hit 19, 80 RBIs, projected for 23. hit for an outstanding batting average in his first season as well, which I did mention in the recent write-up on the Patreon that the catching position, much better for batting average than it used to be. Baldwin hit .274 with those 19 home runs and 80 RBIs. Great rookie season for Baldwin. Again, can't really project that unless you believe he takes that next step in playing time.
Yeah, so as you're finishing up your discussion there, I looked up his playing time splits, and he is below the 80% threshold for percentage of plate appearances versus righties. He was at 78.7%. He's close, Baldwin, but just below it. And it depends on what happens with Sean Murphy. And to your point about Baldwin having a much lower ADP or earlier ADP than Agustin, I think it's because Murphy started out the year hurt and then Baldwin was going to play. So I was wondering if maybe people who drafted Baldwin missed out on all his production, because they probably dropped him once Murphy came back. I'd have to imagine. I'd have to go back and look at the FAB moves, but I feel like that's a great possibility. And yeah, Baldwin had awesome Statcast data, a ton of red. The blue is, there's not much blue there. So he's 24. We keep saying the Braves should be a good lineup. So hopefully next year he plays a lot between catcher and DH. And here's someone I didn't fab at all, Baldwin. I didn't trust the playing time. I don't think when he was up. Sure didn't draft him because I didn't think he'd be around the entire season. So I missed out on Baldwin, but I think he's going to be honestly, he won't be drafted that highly because of how many good catchers there are, or at least how many we think there are, but he could be a pretty solid back end catcher one.
Yep, definitely could be a back. He's going to go higher than that, but I agree with your take. I think he should get most of the reps from Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy, let me just check something real quick, because I don't even think Sean Murphy is he's probably hurt again if he sneezed a second ago. But I know he had the hip injury, had like calf surgery, I believe. Who knows if he'll even be ready for the start of the season. I think this is Drake Baldwin's world, and we're all just living in it when it comes to the catching position in Atlanta, but time will tell on that one. Chandler Simpson, ADP of 413. He was the projected 424th hitter, finished 88th at the position, because Chandler Simpson was projected for 82 at-bats, Ben, and he had 414 over four times. Yeah, projected at-bats, finished hitting .295, 44 steals, 53 runs, 26 ribbies, no homers, the typical rabbit situation. Yeah, I think it's one of those, if you think Chandler Simpson was going to play, yeah, he'd run wild, but I don't know what else to take away from this one.
I'm trying to see how his stolen base rate panned out. All right, so he was projected for 8 steals and 82 at-bats, Chandler Simpson. He had 44 and 414. So the rate for 414 at-bats based on this projection was actually 40 steals. So he was a little bit above pace. So that's pretty good. So I guess over a full year, you project 60 steals for him. But I don't know if Simpson gets 600 at-bats. And I think we talked about him in the past. We were talking about Xavier Edwards, I think, and just trying to build a team when you have someone with no power and so many steals. And yeah, valuation-wise, because of the average and the steals, he rates out pretty good, hitter 88 in that limited playing time. But, man, you have to have Riley and Schwarber on your team and somebody else who's going to hit a ton of homers to make up for what Simpson isn't doing. So I definitely won't be drafting him at all.
At least the projections nailed the home runs. That's a plus. Nailed the home
runs. Yes. That's like the only zero I think we've seen on the entire sheet so far in terms of the difference.
Very impressive. Bryce Terang, this is one, as the season went on, we found out he did a complete swing change. And if you look at his, you know, his Statcast numbers, his just overall contact metrics, his swing rates, everything, there was a dramatic change with what took place with Bryce Terang. He was projected to be the 99th hitter, finished as the 22nd hitter. 504 at-bats to 584. We're getting closer, Ben, closer to what we're looking for there. Projected for 8 homers, hit 18. 35 steals, only stole 24. But what Bryce Terang did, which is a trend with a lot of these overachievers besides the playing time, Bryce Terang hit .288, up from .254 last season. I think a lot of us, Ben, thought, okay, the power could be okay. Speed's awesome. Average is never going to be there, which might curtail things. He hit for more power and his batting average went through the roof. So big improvements for a ball player that, again, another one, only 25 years old.
Yeah, I much prefer this version of Bryce Terang than the one from preseason, and that's why I didn't draft him at all, because I did not want that profile. So I missed out on the breakout for Terang. Yeah, it's funny, projected for 35 steals and only got 24, but he had a much better line in spite of it. So his barrel rate went from 2.4% to 7.9%, more than three times. He more than tripled it. That's awesome. That's how you end up hitting almost 20 homers when you're projected for like nine or whatever it was. The hard hit went up a ton, 29% to 47% between 2024 and last year. So yeah, with the word of the swing change and the work he did in the offseason, I think this is a legit change for Terang. It's so rare to see this happen with hitters. You really have to do a lot of work to improve that much. So I think, I don't know if he'll be projected for 2020. He'll probably be like 15-25, but if he has a good average projection, that's pretty valuable. So yeah, I'll be in on Terang next year. I just hope it doesn't change back to what he used to be.
Yeah, I'm with you, because I'm actually buying in as well. So let's not screw this up, Bryce, especially in a bad second base position. I'll take that 15-25 projection with like a 275. Like, let's do it.
I just wanted to say, so I'm looking at the stack, his Savant page, his OPS by last 3 years went from 585 to 665 to 794. So
yep. Showing market improvements from a young player improving year after year. It's a novel concept if these guys get to play. It's really cool how talented players can do that. All right, we're going to skip Clean Your Sheets, Gavin Sheets. We're going to skip Angel Martinez. We're going to get to our first player tonight, Ben, that actually met the 50 at-bats between projections and overall situations here. So this is actually like pretty close to they just crushed their projections, not just a strictly playing time situation. And that is your not ALCS MVP, but your Game 7 MVP, George Springer, who is the projected 92nd hitter off the board. George Springer finished 10th, the 10th hitter. 10th hitter based on this. George Springer was projected for 72 runs. George Springer had 106 runs scored. Projected for 19 homers. George Springer hit 32, 64 RBIs, drove in 84, 13 steals, stole 18. Projected for 516 at-bats. Ben, he actually had fewer at-bats to destroy those. He had 498 at-bats, so 18 fewer at-bats. Not a ton. Every little bit counts, though. And George Springer hit 309. So I'm trying to wrap my head. Is it the 32 home runs, the 106 runs, or the 309 average that is the most impressive part to me? I want to lean power, but 309, where you got George Springer. George Springer's ADP was 256. To get a 309 hitter at ADP 256, that's a fantasy game changer.
Yeah, I think the average is the most impressive, since it was the first time he ever hit 300 in his career, and he's 36. How often do you see that? That's like Justin Turner, but like on steroids, Justin Turner. I'm not saying Springer took steroids. I'm just saying it's like a massive outlier type season to have at that age. So, and he earned it. I pulled up Springer's Statcast. It's almost all dark red. It's a portion of what Ben Rice had, and Ben Rice had like as elite of a Statcast as you can get. Like there's 99th percentiles for Springer and XWOBA. Imagine being 99th percentile in XWOBA and you're George Springer. Like how is that possible?
Nuts.
His XBA was 98th percentile. His XSLUG was 98th percentile. The barrel rate was 94th percentile. So I don't know. Maybe he was just fully healthy, and I don't know. Maybe he did yoga or something in the off season, Springer, to feel younger. So I'm looking at, and one thing that I did. So I'm comparing his 2024 underlying stats to 2025, and the one thing that I see that has an impact, but I don't think it explains nearly all of this, is his batted ball profile. So Springer was ground ball heavy in 2024. Over half his balls were ground balls, 50.7%. And then this past year, he switched that. So he is now at 37.3% ground ball rate and a 41% fly ball rate. So he went from being ground ball heavy to fly ball heavy by a slight amount, but it was a huge swing in terms of ground ball and fly ball rate. So that's going to help a ton. His homer to fly ball actually went up a lot too. It went from 13% to 20%. But I guess when you're hitting the ball so hard like he did, it kind of justifies the increase in homer to fly ball. So this is another one. I trust this more than I trust Geraldo Perdomo, which is kind of weird to say.
Wow.
Because he's in an age to 37 Springer, but I don't know. They're both pretty big wild cards. I don't know why I picked. I think I picked Perdomo because of how unexplainable even the underlying numbers were for his breakout. But with Springer now, it's kind of backed up. It's just, it's, can you sustain those skills at his age? It's kind of fascinating to see what happens with him.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with where you're going. Like the way Springer did it makes a little more sense. Perdomo just like jumped off the page. It's the age that scares the snot out of me with George Springer. I think it'll scare many in that regard as well.
His XBA went from 247 to 303. Almost 60 points.
309 average. So it's like it wasn't like it was that out of the realm of what happened, which is nuts. Yeah. All right, going to jump around a little more here, skip the next two. Going to go to Spencer Torkelson. And this is, I want to kind of think, dig in here to say, is this like a Steamer 600 type guy? Because Torque was going from minor leagues last year to out of a job to maybe he'll get to play. Now he's going to play in spring, gets the job, and Torque finished the year as a 77th hitter after being projected to be the 257th hitter. Again, playing time was a massive concern as Spencer Torkelson was projected for 327 at-bats and ended up making having 563 at-bats. So a massive jump there, which improved his 13 projected homers to 31, his 43 RBIs to 78. And, you know, he still hit 240, which not great, but still that's the best of Spencer Torkelson's career. So let that sink in for 2 seconds. What are you thinking here when you kind of look at this Spencer Torkelson projection? I know we didn't think he was going to play a lot, but by the end of spring in your final drafts, like when you were drafting your mains, it did look like he was going to get playing time and he was having a monster spring. So how do you look at this projection and see like kind of where it finished?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but I was between Torkelson and Ben Rice in my main event. And I went with Rice because he's on the Yankees, and I got burned by Torkelson the year before. So it was a little bit of, it was definitely heavily influenced by my bias. But yeah, this is kind of frustrating because I was in on Torkelson 2 years ago, or well, I guess 2024, I was in on him after his breakout in 2023, and that burned me in a couple spots. So still, the underlying metrics are pretty solid for him. His XBA is still pretty poor at 237. So his 240 average is kind of to be expected for Torkelson. I think it was on Rob DiPietro's podcast. They were talking about Jake Berger as a profile that isn't necessarily like sustainable. I wonder if Torkelson kind of fits that same bill because, actually Torkelson walks a lot more than Berger does. And
Torque's really young. He's 25.
Yeah. Berger's not, like, he's a few years former, older, but
number one overall pick.
Yeah, so he has that pedigree that Berger doesn't, but I'm viewing them as like sluggers with poor average and those type of traits. So that's why I thought of it. But yeah, it's kind of just like one of those leap of faith projections. Won't see it because of how bad his prior year was. It kind of brought down the last few years of data that go into the following year's projection. So with Torque, I don't know. I know first base is kind of rough from what I've heard so far in reviews and all that, and just knowing how hard it was to fill corner on the waiver wire this year. And because of that, Torkelson will be kind of in need, especially for the power, but I think there's probably some risk here still. The barrel rate was pretty good, but it's not like a lead or anything like that. So he was a great pick where he was going, and what was it, like ADP of 355 for Torkelson. So that's a huge pick there. That's a huge win. But then what's that ADP now? And I think that's really the big question.
Yep, agreed with you there. All right, last one we'll discuss tonight as we'll have a part three next week. We'll get to that in a second. But I want to talk Eugenio Suarez. Was coming off the 2024 season where he hit 30 home runs, 101 RBIs, 90 runs scored, 256. Obviously, all after everyone dropped him, not just you, but everyone dropped him. At an ADP of 180 this year, projected to be the 116th hitter. Eugenio exceeded expectations, being the 26th hitter at the position or in the game. Period. He was projected. Eugenio was projected for 511 at bats, had 588, so outside the 50, but close. Projected for 23 homers, hit 49. 78 RBIs, had 118 RBIs, 91 runs scored, and Eugenio Suarez hit 228, so back to normal there, but exceeded every other counting stat in the runs, RBIs, and power department there. This is another tough one, Ben. He's getting older, had the big season. Do you believe in the second half adjustments? He crushed them. What are you thinking when you see this Eugenio Suarez line?
He might just be someone that I don't draft at all anymore because I just probably just don't feel comfortable with the profile. His XBA was third percentile, 217. And I talked about openly how I struggle with the, at least on my good main event, with average, and I don't want to invite any average sinks onto my teams if I can afford it. So that's a big red flag. And his K percentage was fifth percentile. It's almost 30% for Suarez. So that's not going to help either. And the other thing too, so he went from 30 homers in 2024 to 49 this year.
That's crazy.
He only had 57 barrels this year. So he had eight more barrels than home runs, and that's pretty unsustainable. But then I'm going to go to the pull air rate. He was high up in there too. He was 28.6%, which is a very dark red. I don't know what the distribution is for that, but it's definitely pretty high rate for Suarez. So that kind of helps. Well, that definitely helps. I don't know how the move to Seattle for a full year is going to affect him. I'm not sure if he's a free agent either. So that'll play a role too in terms of how I view him for next year. So, yeah,
he's a free agent.
Okay, so a lot of unknowns still with where he lands up. But aside from me dropping him before he went ballistic in 2024, that's behind me now. The profile is pretty ugly for Suarez, and people are going to see the 49 homers, and he's probably going to get overdrafted, I think. So, yeah, it's just one of those picks where you got a way more than you were expecting for.
Yeah, you got a monster season. Take it, run with it, enjoy it, celebrate. I like Eugenio. I've always liked him when he was free. Like past pick 300, there was discussions to be had there. Right now, it's a lot trickier. Remember when it was like him versus Chapman at pick like 260?
Those days are way behind
us. Way behind us now.
No, this could be like, I mean, they would fail for different reasons, but I could see this being like Santander from last year.
Potentially, yes. Yes, yes, that's a very good pick. That'll be a whole other discussion what to do with Santander this next year. But that'll be another show, which will come back with you at least every week with more to do. Before we wrap this up, Ben, another final thought. What are your thoughts on this section as we did the flip side here of guys that exceeded a lot of young players? So majority of it was playing time. That's just the brass tacks of it on how this played out. But there were a few. We didn't get to – I skipped over certain names and left some out because I'm hoping when I announce the part three a bit again shortly, why. But what were your thoughts on what we discussed tonight as we did the flip side of the, I guess, least accurate of the bunch, or overachievers?
Yeah, and we said it multiple times. I think my takeaway is that a lot of these guys would have stood out in Steamer 600, I believe, because of their homer rates and steal rates per their limited projected at-bats. Yeah, you kind of nailed it. It's a lot of younger players. There's some injured guys looking at I don't know if Grisham was injured, but looking at Story, Laureano kind of sits to that same boat. And then, yeah, it just shows you that it's so hard to project what's going to happen in a season. And it's good to use projections as like a baseline, but they're not going to – more often than not, they're going to be way off with a lot of players, even though there were some hits, but they were pretty boring guys we talked about last week. So you gotta look for more than just the projections when you're doing your player evaluations. They're great to use, but it's not everything, of course.
The biggest takeaway, Steamer 600, apparently. That's where we're going with this. So
could change the title of the podcast to that.
Yeah, but then if people didn't listen to last week's, I recommend doing that because I'd appreciate that. But the very end of the episode I mentioned, we'll do a three parts. The third part's based on the listeners. So you can hit Ben or I up on social media, at Twitter, wherever. Find us, send it to us. I'll send out a tweet or whatever on whatever day we record next week. Or if you're in the Discord, hit us up there. We want to basically just go over a list of names you guys want to hear about. Now that we've done the top, we've done the bottom, send out names just to see how they compare to their projections. How did they fare? Did they overachieve, underachieve? What went right? What went wrong? We'll dig in essentially on what took place there. So next week's episode, part three, is for you guys. So let us know what players you want discussed. Again, they have to be hitters. That's what we're discussing, hitting projections, because pitching projections, throw a dart blindfolded and tell me how things work out for you. So we'll be back with you guys next week to do that. But until then, check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDentric. Good luck, you degenerates drafting already. I'll see you soon. But until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 788. Catch y'all later.